the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome to another edition of the Spot Track Podcast. My name is Mike Gennetti. Monday, April 29th, the draft is in the books. Disclaimer off the top. Some of you may be looking at Spot Track for UDFA breakdowns. They're coming, but I've learned over the past couple of decades here that I'm not going to chase the rat race, which is all these reports from agents and league reporters and et cetera, players themselves saying, I'm agreed to, I've assigned. There's so many mistakes that happen. So many things that get flip-flopped. So many reported signings that are actually invites that never turn into signings. We'll get there. I'm just simply going to wait for the teams to post their rosters in terms of official UDFA classes. They're usually pretty good about actual signings versus invitations and things like that. It's a rat race to get to 90. We're just going to pause a little bit and try to be, instead of being first, let's be 100% right on this. So if you're looking, I'm tracking them internally. I kind of know who's got the bonuses and the guarantees and things like that internally, but we're not going to put those public facing until the teams actually announce those. That's not the case for the draft class, obviously. All seven rounds are on the NFL draft tracker on Spot Track, including projected four-year contracts for each, signing bonuses, AAVs, all that good stuff. Here's the breakdown that I quickly pulled this morning. 11 quarterbacks, 20 running backs, 35 wide receivers, 12 tight ends, 29 offensive tackles, 14 guards, 12 centers, 24 defensive tackles, 21 edge defenders, 19 linebackers. Here's the big one. 36 cornerbacks, 20 safeties, 3 kickers, and 1 lone punter. That's the 257 from the weekend. Couple of standouts here. 6 of those 11 quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks, as you heard last Friday. Historic. And we'll see. 5 of them probably start week 1. All right. I think obviously Penix Jr. is the one. Unless Cousins' Achilles is not healed, I would imagine 5 out of the 6, though I suppose, you know, J.J. McCarthy could be slow played for Sam Darnold, things like that. But 11 QBs total. The 20 running backs kind of surprised me. That was there was a really nice run for a while there, for a minute there, in the mid rounds, starting with Jonathan Brooks. You know, you just didn't see any impact top of the draft running backs this year, and they warned us. They told us this was coming. That's certainly the case. But Jonathan Brooks went at 46, and we ended up with 20 from that point on, all the way down to the 6th round. So between the second round, mid-second round, to the middle of the 6th round, 20 running backs. Obviously, though, and shocking, no surprise, spoiler alert, this is a passing league, 35 wide receivers versus 36 cornerbacks to defend him. I mean, that's just, that says everything. That's what you're looking for here. If you factor in tight ends and safeties, it's 47 pass catchers versus 56 defensive backs. I mean, that's the draft. That's the draft. You had half the number of defensive tackles. You had less than half edge defenders, which is really something. I told you, or I've had an asterisk red flag on this edge defender position for a while now. It just seems to be a dying art. You know, those kind of impact players aren't really coming out of college like they used to be. The schemes, the systems, it's up the middle. All right, the ball's getting out so damn quick. Most defenders don't have time to come around the edge and chip a left tackle and try to get home. All right, most of the time this is happening on the interior. So you're Chris Jones. Okay, your interior defenders are the most valuable players, arguably speaking, on that defensive line. We're seeing the numbers accordingly, and we're seeing the contracts, the veteran extensions, kind of come in accordingly. It used to just be Aaron Donald was a freak unicorn, and nobody tried to kind of recreate that. Everybody's trying to recreate that now, including college football teams, including high school programs that are developing these kids to sit inside on that defensive line with their fingers on the ground, instead of necessarily trying to bump off the outside. So it's not a surprise to me. It just kind of coincides with the trends that we've been following here. So I would expect, monetarily speaking, things to start to creep up, right? Obviously, Nick Bosa and TJ Watt have no trouble banking $100 million guaranteed. And we'll still have those players. I'm not saying this is going to go away completely. I'm just telling you, the frequency of this position in all regards is diminishing. It was a solid draft. All right. I'm not going to go through grades. I'm going to go through some greatest hits here quickly. And then we're going to move on to other sports and other facets of the world, because after now, you know, after the next couple of days, when these UDFAs all kind of get in, it's a slow burn until really mid-July. You know, there's going to be some schedule release stuff and some rookie workout stuff over the next couple of days. And fifth-year option decisions are due May 2nd. Most of those are already in. You know, we can guesstimate the remaining few. I'll certainly do a pod on that at the end of the week when that becomes official. But there's only two tagged players left for that July 15th extension deadline. That's T. Higgins and Antoine Winfield Jr. Winfield's going to get done. That's a post-draft move that should get done. And I'm here to tell you, I've been telling you all along, T. Higgins is not going to get done. I don't think they're even negotiating with T. Higgins. He'll make us stink for a trade that they'll never do, because Cincinnati owns that as well. So you're looking at a holdout, a pretty significant holdout here for T. Higgins. I don't know if it carries into the season, but that's it. It's a short list of items that need to be addressed. Now look, there's still legitimate trade candidates, and there's a plethora of extension candidates. So we're going to focus on that over the next couple of weeks. But other than that, this is kind of a scary time for NFL teams. This is kind of the time when, unfortunately, a bunch of players get in trouble for whatever reason, one reason or another. And we have to start talking about suspensions and possible forfeitures and things like that. But it's the official offseason now. We've gotten through the mess. We kind of know where rosters are going to shake down. We can start talking about depth charts and things like that. But like I said, the laundry list of items and the players that have to be addressed has dwindled down to a nice manageable set. So we'll attack those. But for the most part now, we're in NBA off-season mode and Major League Baseball in-season mode and things like that. The WNBA is about to kick off, and we have most of those contracts. And Caitlin Clark did sign her contract over the weekend. That's officially on the books. It is as advertised until further notice. And most of the WNBA players are now under contract as camp begins. And the regular season, I think, is just 2 weeks away, probably exactly 2 weeks away if I look at the calendar here correctly. All right. Some more draft notes. The Philadelphia Eagles made 9 trades. It's not surprising, because if you just take the scope of every offseason, this is what the Eagles do. They nitpick to the grandest degree, and I love it. Okay, I love it. You can say they're playing chess instead of checkers. Most people kind of put that moniker on Howie Roseman's tenure as GM in Philadelphia. Here's the thing. Amidst this draft chaos that they kind of threw a wrench at a bunch of teams with, they extended Devontae Smith, and then they backed it up with an extension for A.J. Brown. Let's talk about A.J. Brown's extension. We have preliminary numbers in SpotTrack right now. I'm just trying to confirm a couple of the option bonuses, but I've laid the framework out here. It's 3 for $96, which is historic. That's $32 million a year. All right. He had 2 years left. He had 3 years left. So this is a 6-year contract. It's a 3-year extension that carries him through age 32. Now, I made note of the Devontae Smith one and the St. Brown one. A little bit fluffy in the back end to inflate those numbers. That's really not the case here with A.J. Brown. All right. Here's the cash flow for A.J. Brown's 6-year contract. 21, 30, 29, 21, 32, 31. It's not terrible. All right. They kept this thing pretty flat. This is the guy. All right. And it was really important for Devontae Smith to get up to 25 a year to become the new A.J. Brown model in Philadelphia. And then it was equally important for Philadelphia to say, okay, we've got our number two locked in, or our 1B locked in. Now let's re-up A.J. Brown to his standards, which is top of the league. And it's twofold brilliant. A, you keep AJ Brown on the books, and now you've got a 1-2 punch that's expensive as hell, but is as good as any other 1-2 punch in the league. So you're rolling the dice on that. And you've just raised the bar for CeeDee Lamb, a division rival, for Ja'Marr Chase, and for Justin Jefferson, a conference rival. I mean, the floor is now $32 million, 84 practical guarantee. That's what AJ Brown has done. And like I said, it's not extremely fluffy by any regard. Okay. It's $80 million over the next 3 years. There's a $4 million tack on that he will get from 2027. So for all intents and purposes, this is a 4-year contract. Okay. I would expect 4 years and $101 million. And then we'll talk about it at age 30 going on 31 in the 2028 offseason if he's still this kind of player. But that's what's happened here. So you can talk about the trades. You can talk about their draft picks. I thought they were above average, as usual, in most of those areas. But locking in these two players is something else. There's a lot of teams that are schemish and locking in one top of the market wide receiver. They've gone too deep. And I think there's a lot of teams in the league that have envy for what's happened here. Now, I've joked about the structure of Eagles contracts for quite some time now, okay? The way that they do business, which is heavily bonus prorated, right? Everything gets pushed down and it's their dead cap. It's not tradable dead cap, but the way they do business allows them to keep cap hits extremely low over the course of the early stages of every single contract extension. So for Devontae Smith, for example, right? His next 4 cap hits on a 5-year contract are 8-1, 7-5, 10-7, and 13-5. It's because he's got a signing bonus and 4 option bonuses. Now, they could convert one of those option bonuses into base salary if things are kind of going off the rails a little bit. That's the option that they have. That's the option of the bonus. They can exercise it as a bonus and spread it out, or they can decline that option and turn it back into salary and take the lump sum in one single year. But for now, he's basically at bare minimum cap hits, Devontae Smith, for the next 4 seasons. AJ Brown, 11-8, 17-8, and then an inflated 45-4. But I'm assuming, and that's why I'm speaking to it here, I'm assuming there's an option bonus there that they could convert much of that $28.75 million salary into an option bonus in 2026. Kind of keep that cap train rolling. So for now, 2 years of really, really nice value for this 1-2 punch. Okay. About $20 million combined for 2024 in cap and about $25 million combined in 2025. That's extremely manageable for 2 superstar wide receivers. All right. Dallas Goedert probably falls off this roster after 2024. The Barkley contract gets extremely flexible in terms of cap after 2024. So from a weapon standpoint, there's not a lot to deal with. Now, they're going to have to backfill, right, with a lot of vet mins and things like that. They're used to that. And oh, by the way, it's not like the Jalen Hurts contract is hurting them yet, right? The cap hit this year is 13.5. It goes to 21.7 next year, 31.7 in 2026. So for the tenure of Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and even Barkley, if you want to throw it in there, right, who certainly isn't going to be breaking their cap bank by any regard. 3.8 this year, 5.5 next year, and then the guarantees fall off. Everybody's super manageable. That's the benefit you have when you structure contracts the way you do. So why doesn't everybody do it? Because it's an immense risk. Like I said, all of the dead cap is yours. There's no getting off it. You're operating with minimum salaries and bonuses that, when exercised, 100% stay with you. There are a lot of teams that don't want to go that deep down the rabbit hole. They want the flexibility. They want the flexibility to say, okay, you take the rest of this off our hands. We'll take the mid-round pick and start this process over through the draft. With these superstar players at positions of importance, quarterback, left tackle, wide receiver, Philadelphia's just said, look, these guys are on our roster for 3 years anyway. So we're not even going to deal with the what ifs or the maybes or the who's and the what's. We're going to take the cap savings immediately. And if there's a mess after that, yeah, we're going to take a hell of a dead cap hit on it. But that's the price we've paid for 3 years of being able to maximize our roster construction. I do believe, you know, and I know I kind of jokingly crap on this whole process. I do believe more teams should and will start to adopt this philosophy. It doesn't make sense not to. It just doesn't. Now, there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of moving parts. Every year, there's going to be one or two trades. Every year. It's not that it's hard work for GMs. It's really difficult to ensure continuity, to give your coaching staff the best possible chance every single July and August to get this team ready, right? The more new, the more difficulty you're going to have from a roster standpoint, getting everybody up to speed on the same page. It's just a fact of life. I mean, anybody who's in the coaching world knows it's really hard, even in just the business world, right? You bring in a brand new employee or an intern or something. Getting everybody up to speed takes time, takes effort. Continuity is easier, but it's not always the best process. And by the way, I'm not sitting here, you know, not forgetting that the Eagles were not a great team last year and that they fell off a cliff and that something went completely wrong here. So I'm praising them for their contract structure. I'm praising them for their aggressiveness this offseason. But if they don't win, right? If they don't compete in this division, if Jalen Hurts doesn't take that next step, it's all for naught. Now, no concerns about AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. None. But it's definitely worth noting the 1-2 wide receiver contract, because I don't think that's a philosophy many teams are going to take yet. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right. In terms of a combined AAV, this team's blowing everybody out of the water. All right. $64 million of combined AAV for wide receivers on the Eagles right now. Now that's inflated because we got some camp bodies and things like that. But the next highest is Seattle at 48. So there's a $15 million difference per year from what Philly's doing and what the rest of the league is doing. All right. And the Chargers, by the way, who dumped off Keenan Allen and Mike Williams this offseason, are a league low $7 million of combined AAV for 7 wide receivers. So they got work to do. They got work to do. They know it. Potentially, this is a position where more trades can happen over the next couple of weeks, but we'll be monitoring that. Certainly the 49ers rumors did not come to fruition for one reason or another, but we'll see where we get to with some of these rosters at this position, which is obviously a highlight position. 35 drafted wide receivers, 36 drafted cornerbacks to try to shut them down over the course of the next 3 to 4 seasons on rookie contracts. There's value there, and there are exploding markets. All right. Again, AJ Brown, $32 million a year. $84 million practically guaranteed. He will see that $84 million based on the structure of that contract. And that's the new going rate. Let's quickly update that, by the way. Quarterback, Joe Burrow, still the top dog at $55 million per year. Christian McCaffrey, still the top dog in running backs with $16 million. But it was a good offseason. Jonathan Taylor got $14 million. Barkley got $12.5 million. Josh Jacobs got $12 million. And Joe Mixon's re-up in Houston came in at $8.5 million. AJ Brown sits atop the wide receiver market. Amon Ra St. Brown at 30 and change is second. We saw 1, 2, 6, 9, 10 update this year in terms of wide receivers, and we're not done. We are not done. Tight ends. Right now it's Darren Waller at kind of a restructured $17 million per year. That's a fluffy restructure, though. Sounds like he's about to retire. And if that happens, TJ Hockenson's re-up in Minnesota at 16.5 per year is certainly the new top dog. Penei Sewell with Detroit, they've started their extension process, is the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history at $28 million a year. And by the way, it's not even close. Okay, we had Laremy Tunsil at 25. We had Andrew Thomas at 23.5 and then Trent Williams at 23 and change. They were kind of ticking up a little bit, right? And then the Lions said, forget that. Okay, this guy is not somebody we want to screw around with negotiation-wise, because we've got more mouths to feed here. Okay, yeah, they did the wide receiver. Yes, they've done Sewell. They've still got Decker. They still got Goff. They still got other options that they want to address this offseason specifically to go along with a really nice aggressive draft that, I don't know, completely changed their secondary. I don't think it's too much to ask there. The conversation with Tool is he's been a right tackle for the better part of his entire career here. Does that money mean that if not now, at some point, he's going to be the new left tackle for this Lions offense? It's possible that that's what this money is signifying. We saw that before with Orlando Brown Jr. and a couple of Juwan Taylor when they flip-flopped a little bit. We'll see if that's the case here for Sewell, but absolutely gigantic numbers coming out of Detroit, at least to start here with St. Brown at 30 and change and Sewell at 28, really overtaking this market. That's a full reset. Landon Dickerson, Philadelphia, is the highest paid guard at $21 million per year. And Frank Ragnow, back to Detroit, $13.5 million, the highest paid center in football. So Detroit now has two of the top five paid offensive linemen across the board in the entire league. Edge defender, it's Bosa at 34, by a lot, by the way. Right, that Bosa contract, it was a surprise to me when it came in. I thought 30 was going to be the number because everybody else was at 28 and change, right? Miles Garrett, 25, TJ Watt, 28. That was it at the time. Then Nick Bosa went $34 million a year, and it's really not as fluffy as you want it to be. It's a pretty stable $34 million a year, especially early on. Now, Josh Allen and Brian Burns have come in at 28, right? So it appears that the league itself, the other front offices, are treating the Bosa contract as a complete one-off and that everybody else has kind of rounded back into form a little bit. But again, red flag. I'm monitoring this position pretty haphazardly here because there are some standouts, let's put it that way. Defensive tackle, huge draft for DTs, as I mentioned. And a nice offseason as well. Chris Jones re-upped at $31.75 million. Christian Wilkins locked in with the Raiders at 27.5 and Justin Madubuike at 24.5 to stay in Baltimore off his franchise tag. Off-ball linebackers, Roquan's at 20. That's still the number. All right, this position didn't even get touched. We thought Patrick Queen had a chance to go up there near the top. He came in at 13.6 with Pittsburgh. So one of those kind of eyebrow-raising free agent contracts that we talked about quite a bit in March. And to the cornerbacks. That could use it a little love here, honestly. Legarius Sneed went 19-1. That's sixth on the list. Jalen Johnson got 19 this offseason. That's seventh. All right. Jaire Alexander at 21 is still the going rate. So huge draft, decent free agency, but this is not a position that has been reset for the past 18 months or so. And I don't say I'm monitoring it, but could be a bit of a supply-demand situation going on here. Or just buyer's regret, maybe at the top of the market a little bit. We'll see where this goes. But for Sneed and Johnson to not really approach resetting this average salary market at this position might be something to keep an eye on here for sure. Safeties, Derwin James still at 19-1. That's going to change. Antoine Winfield Jr. is going to... Antoine Winfield Jr. could Nick Bosa this market. And I don't think too many people would gawk at it. So if you tell me this comes in at $22, $23 million a year, I'd be right there for it. Because I think he's a five-tool player on a team that needs to lock in a couple of core pieces defensively to go along with some offensive players that they've locked in. So I don't know why there would be any back and forth here. To me, you're going to have to push hard, and Winfield should be putting his foot down for the world. Because, I mean, the franchise tag basically aligns with the top of the safety market. So it should be well north of that. Kickers, back to Philly. Jake Elliott at six, tied with Justin Tucker from Baltimore. And Michael Dixon is the highest average paid punter in the NFL currently speaking. Okay, I'm going to flip the switch to basketball quickly and then we'll get out of here on a Monday. The Phoenix Suns were eliminated last night. If you listened to a couple episodes ago where Scott Allen and I detailed some of these postseason teams, this was the one both of us had basically circled in Sharpie as I just don't see it. There's no chemistry. There's no offensive structure. It's just kind of street ball without players who can really get it done anymore. It's exactly what it looked like against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are just younger, more athletic, and better right now. So for them to be swept out of this postseason was absolutely no surprise to me. The problem is this. I woke up this morning with a cup of coffee and tried to fix this team, and I don't know how the hell you do it. Because nobody's taking this Bradley Beal contract, even though there's only 2 years left. Here's the numbers, though. And I tweeted them out this morning, if you follow me at SpotTrek on Twitter. Bradley Beal's got 2 for $104. Kevin Durant's got 2 for $103. Devin Booker just re-upped at 4 for $221. Grayson Allen, who actually had a nice little season, re-upped at 4 for $70. Nurkic, the big man who came over from Portland in the big man swap there, 2 for $37.5 left. And Nasir Little, 3 for $21 and change remaining. The free agents are Royce O'Neal, who can shoot. So you would imagine a contender would snag him up. Thad Young, Isaiah Thomas. There's a couple of small player options on the Eric Gordons and the Damian Lees of the world. It was a haphazardly put together team, in my opinion. Unbelievably top heavy. It felt like they moved DeAndre Ayton just to move him. And they got a good Nurkic season, but I should say a healthy Nurkic season. But that's not a player who can be the centerpiece of this big three, if you want to call them that, Booker, Beal, and Durant, and elevate this top starting five roster. It just didn't happen. All right. There were certainly flashes. There were certainly some Booker games and some Durant games and even a couple of Beal games down the stretch. But this is an uninspiring team, and they're going to need help. They're going to need help from the league to really change the course of their future. And I believe that comes with a trade. Now, I don't think it's Durant, but he's done this before. He's looked around the room and said, I don't want to be here anymore. Let's just get this done. He's done this, what, 4 times now? To me, that's the one that would make the most sense. I don't think it makes any sense to move on from Devin Booker, even if he might get you the most right now, 28 years old, 4 years under contract. So it wouldn't surprise me one iota if by June 30th, there's either a rumor conversation or Kevin Durant has officially announced that he is requesting a trade out of Phoenix. It's just the going rate with superstar players. You know, that's going to be the conversation with the Lakers the second that Denver officially knocks him out, probably even within the next couple of hours here. But that's going to be the conversation. All right. Durant's 36, almost 36, 35 and a half here. He's not going to sit around and wait, you know, and he'll be linked to Golden State. He'll be linked to some of these teams that are up and coming. Makes sense. That's the only version of this to me that maybe has an expectation, because we've seen it happen so many times before. Sure, they could backfill a better, more depth. That's easier said than done for a team without cap space. And that's what you've done by creating this big three, something that was unbelievably popular 10 years ago. Most teams are saying, screw it. Maybe we'll have a two, but we need second round picks to hit. And we need exception players to hit, because the league is set up formulaically for a reason, to minimize teams from going Godfather Golden State world. That's what the new CBA has said. Most teams have adjusted. Phoenix has not. Phoenix is still trying to play 2004 basketball from a roster construction standpoint. And that's exactly what it looked like out there this past couple of weeks. So they're stuck. They need some help. And when they don't get it, don't be surprised if Kevin Durant comes out on his boardroom account and says, it's time. Let's get this done, guys. Get me the hell out of here. That's it. That's the logical move that I see coming out of the Phoenix Suns. Minnesota, by the way, unbelievably impressive. They have a chance. They have a legitimate chance, especially with the Clippers and Dallas beating themselves up. Denver looks obviously ridiculously solid, but this Minnesota team is young enough and dumb enough to go up there with anybody. And I put them ahead of OKC right now because of the athleticism, because of Anthony Edwards' ability to take over games. Cat's healthy. They don't really know how to use him quite yet, and maybe ever, but there's just so many bodies in different scenarios, right? They can play some defense, but they can really explode offensively speaking. And I think that's a team to watch. If not this year, for sure, they're going to be the hot team coming into the 2024-25 offseason that everybody's going to throw some money at, and you're going to expect maybe one big splashy move this offseason to really ramp them into Denver Nuggets territory if they don't get it done this year. All right, monitoring baseball stuff. Payrolls are updating on the daily. NHL offseason is almost here as well, so NHL and NBA will be kind of simultaneously taken on, although Keith Smith and Scott Allen in their NBA Next podcast will be detailing as much of this NBA offseason stuff as humanly possible, including twice this week on podcasts and with Keith's offseason articles now live on SpotTrack.com. He's about 15% of the way done, and he'll continue to do those as teams get eliminated. So if you want more Phoenix Suns info, I guarantee you that Keith will be all over this with plenty more words, plenty more numbers, and probably a better plan than what I just laid out for you here. Because if you're a Suns fan, hearing that Durant may request a trade is probably your last case scenario, but it may be the best case scenario at the end of the day as well. We'll be checking some NFL moves next time around. Expect extension conversations, some off-season summer trade candidates, and I'm sure we'll be breaking down a few more contracts that have hit the books as well. For Scott Allen, my name is Mike Giannetti. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Spot Trick.